final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science coming to you from duct tape, baling wire, and sticky notes. Yeah, between our radio network and People for People, we seem to figure out ways to keep on bringing you this broadcast. So I hope you really appreciate it and throw a smiley face in all the chat rooms for us. Because it's a lot of effort to do what it is that we do. It's not always necessarily easy. Sometimes you got to fight with old computers, and sometimes you got to fight with changes in software and IP addresses and all that. So there's a lot goes on behind the scenes. So I'd like to thank Charles today for helping send a signal over to People for People. If you have any trouble listening in, you can always jump in the Super Chat Room. And if you happen to already be in the Super Chat Room and you want to go and visit the People for People Radio Network, there is a link right below all the four chat rooms in the Super Chat chat room. So, where there's a will, there's a way. So, they have really been listening. Mad Science Show is live. Been talking about plasma forever and a day, and I told people way back when there's a whole lot more than meets the eye when it comes down to plasma. What plasma technology has the capability of doing is basically turning trash into treasure. And so with that said, I'm going to play a podcast or two, and so we'll see where we come from that. But listen closely what they're talking about, and it's basically mimics what I've been saying for quite some time. I've been trying to tell people about this this deal, and so with that said, I just got distracted. Sorry about that. So anyway, let's start with this one podcast right here. I guess I got to push play, right?
Solid, liquid, and gas lies the fourth state of matter. Plasma. Plasma is ionized gas, energized to the point where electrons are freed from their atoms or molecules, releasing extreme levels of energy. Energy that can be harnessed for a variety of applications, such as power generation. Look skyward and you'll see the most vivid example of plasma in action, the sun. Lightning is perhaps Mother Nature's most dramatic example of plasma. A breakthrough technology, plasma gasification applies these same principles to produce energy that is exceptionally low in emissions. The plasma torch is the basic tool for making controlled, continuous lightning. Electricity passes from the tip of one electrode to the tip of another. Air exposed to the lightning bolt becomes plasma and releases enormous energy in the form of heat, 10,000 degrees Celsius. Then, gas is pushed between the electrodes to form a plasma plume. The heat is intensely localized, and it dissipates quickly. You can safely stand within feet of the plasma torch. But if you draw air through plasma torches and into a cupola containing a medium that retains the heat and distributes it evenly, one creates a zone of influence hot enough to burst the bonds of most molecules, resulting in simple elemental structures. Metals that do not vaporize will instead melt and be captured in an inert glass form that cannot be penetrated by air or water. Energy-laden, carbonaceous materials such as municipal solid waste will be converted into synthesis gas. The clean synthesis gas is then used to generate electricity for homes, offices, and a variety of industrial applications. And all this without incineration. This is how plasma gasification works. Municipal solid waste is fed into the plasma gasifier. The plasma gasifier has 4 to 6 electric plasma torches that heat air to the plasma state. The hot air is then injected into the gasifier, heating a bed of metallurgical coke and limestone to 7 to 8,000 degrees Fahrenheit. The hot gases now in the bed material break down the fuel to produce a synthesis gas, or syngas, consisting primarily of hydrogen and carbon monoxide gases. The syngas is isolated, cleansed of pollutants and particulate matter, and then used to generate electric power. The remaining inorganic components of the fuel, which do not vaporize, are converted to molten slag, collected through the bottom of the gasifier, and cooled into a glass-like byproduct. The vitrified slag can be safely used as roadbed material for building highways or in other construction projects. The newly created syngas exits through the top of the plasma gasifier and enters a heat recovery unit where the excess heat is recaptured to create steam, which can be used later in the syngas cleaning process. The cooled syngas then moves to the baghouse, a particulate removal system which separates particulate matter from the syngas. The syngas continues through the cleaning process. The cleaning process includes a series of scrubbing and chemical stripping processes that further cools the syngas and then removes pollutants. Once the syngas is cleaned, the remaining gas, composed largely of hydrogen and carbon monoxide, is compressed and then combusted in the gas turbine. The gas turbine spins the generator to produce electricity. Exhaust heat from the gas turbine is then used to create steam in the heat recovery steam generator. This steam is used to drive a steam turbine, which spins another generator to create additional clean energy through an efficient combined cycle process. Plasma gasification is an environmentally responsible technology. When municipal solid waste decomposes in landfills, gases such as methane, a major greenhouse gas 21 times worse than carbon dioxide, are emitted into the atmosphere. Plasma gasification avoids this process entirely, and because it decreases the overall volume of waste, it has the added benefit of slowing down landfill development. Trucks that haul municipal solid waste to faraway landfills consume diesel and generate carbon dioxide. Plasma gasification eliminates unnecessary truck traffic, and to the extent plasma gasifiers displace fossil-fueled power plants, carbon dioxide is further eliminated. Plasma gasification is not incineration, and for that reason, gasifying solid waste is better than landfilling it, burning it, or burning the methane it produces when it decomposes. Plasma gasification generates steam and electricity while reducing greenhouse gas emissions that contribute to global warming. Through clean energy alternatives such as plasma gasification, NRG continues to lead the way in providing environmentally responsible energy and reducing greenhouse gases from the next wave of new power generation.
Okay, so, you know, the only two things that I really disagreed with that, if you listen into the Mad Science show long enough, that would be, you know, the global warming portion and the CO2. But nonetheless, given the devil their due or whatever, that, you know, you're talking about a clean energy source. And the best news about this whole deal is what I've been talking about for quite some time, that we could actually build compact systems that would run a house independently of the power grid by using the same exact process. See, high voltage is only good for one thing as far as the standard industry is, because they use high voltage, high frequencies to send that energy that you use in your house longer ways, so that you, when by the time it gets to your transformer on your pole outside, it's a a steady wave, and then it can be stepped down into usable current that you can actually use in your house. However, through all the high voltage energy research and plasma research that I've done, I've figured out different ways that you could actually use that high voltage as opposed to just using it for, like a Tesla coil for sparks and all that kind of stuff, or wireless energy transfer. You can actually take that heat energy from that plasma and you can turn it into other types of energies. You can actually use it to burn things, basically better than a normal incinerator, because it's actually done differently than you would be in an actual incinerator. So you're using the temperature of that plasma to actually change the molecular structure of the material, while at the same time returning, taking that that gas that's created by that into you know, a usable fuel source for generating systems. And you heard in this little podcast right here, it wasn't just using the gas, but it was also using the exhaust heat from the first gas turbine generator to make steam to run a second generator. So both of these concepts could actually be utilized in a smaller system that could be, you know, basically like your outside AC unit. If you have a central air unit outside, you could make it somewhere around about that size or potentially a little larger. But nonetheless, it'd be a home generating system that turned your garbage, and I'm talking about all the garbage, not just the you know, the paper, the plastics and stuff like that into fuel, but the liquids as well inside there can be separated, so you can quite literally don't have to do anything to your trash but dump it in the trash, and it will separate all the different you know, materials from each other. And so you end up with sort of a slag at the end that can be actually useful for other projects and stuff like that, that's harmless to the environment. And so, you know, with that said, you know, adding a few extra technologies to the system, you know, such as hydrogen technology, so you'd have, instead of, you know, you'd be using the gas for the doggone first generator, you'd be using the heat off the exhaust for the second generator, and on the third generator, you could actually use hydrogen technology to, you know, get rid of the liquid portion of the deal. So there's all kinds of different methods. Even if you go back to the Geet machine that they used, they have to look that one up. We played that on there before. But there was a Geet machine that basically used the exhaust to basically make plasma inside the exhaust from the heat actually act like more like a catalytic converter would. But either way, it turned what would have been crud into fuel. And so, you know, I'm happy that these folks have actually been listening out there, you know, and it's, some of these videos go all the way back to 2012. So I'm thinking, you know, if they've already got the idea, you know, they understand what it is I've been talking about all this time about plasma, that plasma has more uses than just, you know, wireless energy transfer or energy storage and that kind of jazz, well then, you know, they should have already been moving towards using this type of project, you know, more of a mainstream. Of course, now you know how industry works. They're probably dragging their feet on it because, you know, you're talking about coal industry, you're talking about nuclear power industry, and, you know, any of the other, you know, electrical generating forms that they use out there, you know, with what they call fossil fuels kind of thing, you know, even diesel or whatever. And even to some extent, natural gas. But if you think about what I'm saying here, all your trash, basically, the lady just said in that podcast that, you know, when you take it to the landfill, it produces methane. And there's people that use that methane to actually run the trucks that they use to haul the trash with. So it's producing natural gas. It's just producing a different type of natural gas. So all that garbage has a purpose now. And even to the extent when you're not generating enough garbage, you know, there's plenty of garbage to go around out here in this world. So, you know, I'm going to play a few other podcasts that actually kind of talk about that. But I got one more before we get down that far. But either way, we have the capability to literally engineer generating systems that would be self-contained using any waste products, even your grass clippings from your yard, you know, trash that blows up in your yard. Or even if you need extra fuel, you can go down the street and clean up the neighborhood and use that trash. And by the time that it goes through the entire process of these types of systems, then you don't have all the waste that everybody keeps worrying about. So let's start with this podcast right here.
Southwest environmental campaigners say plans to incinerate much of our rubbish in future may prove to be a costly mistake. A number of energy from waste plants are to be built around the region, but campaigners say there could be better technologies. Our environment correspondent Adrian Campbell's been looking at one alternative.
Could a collection of ripped up old rubbish dried out and graded for use as fuel be the answer to the growing problem of what to do with our waste? Now landfill's running out, there's a move towards using rubbish to make heat and electricity. But at this demonstration plant in Swindon, they're showing off a technology which is different to incineration. It uses high temperatures to melt, gasify or vaporise waste, maximising what's recovered at the end.
Until recently, waste management was all about throwing material into a big hole in the ground. And there's really been a paradigm shift in the whole way we see waste treatment. And we believe this is absolutely the solution to the problem.
An electrode is lowered into the plasma converter, and gas and solid material fed into the chamber. The plasma arc in the middle of the device reaches around 6,000 degrees Celsius, and the gas inside is around 1,000 degrees. Clean exhaust gases are produced, which are then used to power generators. The rest of the material runs off and solidifies into what's called plasma rock. And the rock can be broken down and used in the construction industry. We were given a guided tour of the plant together with Peter Brooks, a Southwest environmental campaigner.
If this is a technology that actually gets maximum benefit out of all the use of materials, and it gives you energy, and it gives you a clean 1% plasma rock at the end, which is completely environmentally acceptable, it's just the perfect solution.
Now, this is a demonstration facility. A full-scale plant could produce enough power for 15,000 homes. And when it comes to emissions, this plant is well within European Union limits.
Norway and Belgium are about to build this type of facility, but our local authorities are slower to accept the concept. Working out the final cost of which system to buy isn't easy, but with landfill running out across the southwest, it's crucial that the planners back the right technology. Adrian Campbell, BBC Spotlight.
So, even in that one right there, they're pretty much talking about the same exact thing, but they're talking about, you know, basically bureaucracy and, you know, not in my backyard kind of thing. You know, there's folks out there that don't want power plants in their backyard. However, it may come down to a case where you actually have your own personalized power plant in your backyard. And, you know, you can dress it up any way you want. Paint some racing stripes on it or something. You know, some pink flamingos around it, but you wouldn't even really notice it after a while. But anyway, let's keep rolling here.
Plastic pollution is everywhere. It's in our oceans, in the forest, it's in our food cycle, and it's in the bellies of birds and whales. But there's hope. Let's take a look at six technologies used here in Israel to tackle the global plastic pollution problem. It looks, feels, and sounds like plastic, but it's not regular plastic. The Israeli startup Tipa has developed 100% compostable packaging, like this one.
Today, every piece of plastic that we use actually lasts forever. We don't know if it's 500 years or 1,000 of years. Those are the numbers. The inspiration came from nature to create a package that is like, in a sense, like an orange peel. A package that will decompose and biodegrade within 6 months or so. And in that way, to solve the plastic problem of the world.
UBQ has developed the only solution to convert all kinds of unsorted household waste, from dirty diapers to dinner leftovers to mixed plastics and cardboards, into a renewable material from which you can manufacture all kinds of everyday goods. Birds, dolphins, whales die consuming our plastic waste. But some organisms can actually break down plastic. Researchers at Ben Gurion University are developing proteins and bacteria that can break down plastic and produce green energy in the process. Holy turtles! Well, that's the name of a giant 1,000-foot contraption created by SodaStream to capture and collect floating trash in our oceans. The RDF plant in central Israel turns garbage into green energy. The plant sorts all kinds of waste, recycling and composting some of it, and burning the rest in a process that's far cleaner than burning fossil fuels. Microplastics are tiny pieces of plastic pollution. Researchers at Browning College of Engineering and Haifa University are working with the European Go Jelly Project to use jellyfish mucus as a way to filter plastic pollution in our oceans.
The question is, how do we reduce microplastics in the ocean by using mucus from jellyfish, which has properties which allow us to collect and concentrate the microplastics that are being emitted by sewage treatment plants, thereby reducing what goes out into the environment and ultimately to the ocean?
In addition to technology, we need new policies, cleanup efforts, and ultimately to change our consumption habits to solve our global plastic epidemic. If you care, share.
All right, so we cared, we shared. So basically, you're starting to hear a whole lot more about different technologies that are coming on board in order to get rid of the waste problem. A lot of these things have been talking about for years and been talking about plasma. Like I said, I try to tell people there's a whole lot more uses for, you know, plasma than you can possibly imagine when it comes to clean, renewable alternative energy sources and solutions out there in the world. So, you know, they have really been listening. I'm glad to know that, you know. Did they get it all from me? I don't say that that's the case, but what I do say is that I know I've been talking about this for quite some time, and looking back on some of these videos, I'm still kind of amazed that, you know, they even got around to doing anything like that. Plus, that, you know, it's been going on for so long and you haven't really heard about this in the mainstream media. You know, of course, BBC did one. I think that one there was about around about 2016. But they also talked about, I don't know if it was on this one here, might be the next one that I'm getting ready to play, talk about, you know, Navy ships going to be starting to use different, basically smaller versions of this to take care of their waste that's on their ship. And the thing about it, back whenever I was in the Navy, they had basically one way to get rid of trash, and that was to throw it over the back of the ship. So you'd throw it down there, the propellers chop it up and send it out to sea. Well, that's been going on for years, so that's one of the hidden secrets of you know, Navy life out there, probably for every single military, every single nation's Navy. They've probably been throwing trash overseas for years, decades or whatever, I don't know. But either way, now you got a remedy for it. You can actually turn that garbage into a useful product to help run the ship, you know, help supplement the fuel cost, or even completely, you know, run that ship off of there. Because if you also add hydrogen technology in there, even the liquid waste on there, you know, even the sewage portion of the ships and stuff like that doesn't have to get pumped out in the ocean either, if you understand what I'm talking about. But so that basically turns whatever would have been waste, whatever been waste energy, into a plus. And now you got super efficient, you know, generating power plants and a machine that's one that's out there like the Navy ships are out there. Nothing gets wasted off of it. It all gets recycled, everything. And so, you know, with that said, there's some hope for the future as far as, you know, someday you won't hear about garbage or, you know, plastic floating around in the ocean. And, you know, I don't know about y'all, but that kind of makes me happy knowing that. So let's move right along here.
Globally, people are increasingly aware of the environmental consequences of poor waste management and disposal, problematic landfills, pollution of our land, underground water, lakes, rivers and oceans, and harmful emissions, including substantial greenhouse gases released into the atmosphere. These consequences are compounded through increased populations producing ever more waste. Current waste disposal methods also demand the expanding use of polluting heavy transport to move waste to often distant disposal sites. Fortunately, there are solutions, including lifestyle changes to reduce waste, better education in regards to waste recycling, and applying technologies that better process non-recyclable waste, and better still, convert it to energy. EcoWaste Vertical Rotary Gasification is a proven and commercially successful process that converts solid waste to baseload electricity without odor or harmful emissions at a locally situated facility. The truck is driven into the facility building and tips the waste into a fully enclosed pit. A grab crane deposits the rubbish into the vertical rotary gasifier, which runs at white hot temperatures in a low oxygen environment. The majority of the waste instantaneously converts to a gas called syngas, similar to natural gas. Any remaining solid waste is used as fuel to maintain the vessel's high temperature. Slag and ash production is minimal due to the efficient and well-controlled combustion process in the lower part of the vessel. The restricted oxygen means the highly volatile syngas is prevented from burning and is sucked out of the chamber into the syngas combustion vessel. Here it's combined with large volumes of air, increasing the temperature to around 1000 degrees centigrade. These extremely hot gases flow into a heat exchange boiler where they are cooled by converting water into superheated steam in an enclosed loop system which in turn drives turbines to produce electricity. Finally, the exhaust gases from the heat exchange are cleaned to neutralize excess activated carbon and any small particles of fly ash. The gases pass through a large filter bag before being exhausted through the stack, essentially as nitrogen gas, which naturally makes up most of our atmosphere. Importantly, as part of the quality control system, the stack contains inline sensors which precisely monitor emissions. Any variances are immediately detected and appropriately adjusted through online controls to ensure all emissions continue to be environmentally safe. Our partners, who are based in Australia, have evaluated the gasification process in detail to ensure it meets the highest EU and Western-based government and regulatory authority standards. The key advantages of the EcoWaste waste-to-gasification energy system include a proven, audited, best practice commercial system that's been successfully operated in several countries for over a decade. Collecting and processing the waste locally eliminates thousands of waste truck movements through cities to large landfill and incineration sites. Gasification requires a much smaller land footprint to efficiently process the expanding need for rubbish disposal. Significant electric power is generated for local communities, and water used in the process is continually cleaned and recycled. Modular processing lines mean continued plant operation during maintenance. The plants are designed for long-term use and can be refurbished without closure to ensure operations in excess of 30 years. The system provides a clean, sustainable and efficient waste-to-energy solution, and it provides a transparent waste management process that can be monitored externally by local government and regulatory agencies. EcoWaste, the smart waste to gasification energy solution.
Alright, so what was the difference between that one and the one prior? See, one was using plasma and one's not. And so I got a couple more like that that I want to play as well, because even though a lot of them talk about the same exact thing, there are some differences in the systems. You know, as to how you're actually burning this and how they're actually, treating any what would have been waste byproducts and stuff like that, so that by the time it comes out, your emissions are next to nothing, well below what the standard would be for, any kind of exhaust or gases that escape. So, with that said, even without the plasma portion, there are plants out there already working that are turning trash into fuel. And in my view, that's a plus, because the less trash you're putting in the landfill, the less likelihood it's going to leach down into you know, waterways, or, you know, let off other gases out there, you know, stink up the neighborhood or whatever. And so this technology, you know, I'm glad to hear it coming around. There are, you know, byproducts that can be made from the plasma that aren't necessarily being made from the natural just incineration of the stuff. And that one there, the plasma, I believe, is going to be the best go, because you actually get useful products out there, because the melting temperatures of a lot of metals can't keep up with that plasma. So whatever goes into that plasma arc gets incinerated, and metals get burnt, and so they can actually separate out the different materials and be able to recycle those materials. So you could throw the whole bag of trash into a grinder type machine, grind it all up into little particles, dry the stuff out, and then send it right down in through the burning system. And in some instances, if you're doing it properly, you don't even have to dry it out. You can just use it just like it is, and I've been saying this forever and day. If you can't find free energy, it's because you're not paying attention or you're not looking hard enough, because everything out there is energy. And if you're utilizing this properly, then that means that you ain't producing a bunch of garbage that has to be buried up in a landfill. You're not producing, radioactive materials or anything like that. You're just breaking all these components back down into their natural state and utilizing the energy released from that, not just in SEM gases, but synthetic gases or whatever, but in the doggone heat as well. So, like that very first one talked about two separate turbines. One was a gas turbine, and the other one was a steam turbine. So you're using the maximum amount of that energy coming up out of what would have otherwise been a waste product to generate electricity to help the people have everything, the luxuries of their TV, their internet, AC, and all that kind of stuff, and even heating systems. They actually pipe and heat in some instance from that deal down up through tubes and everything, and using that heat to help heat other buildings as well. So where there's a will, there's a way. There's a lot of ingenuity going on here that we're talking about. Hopefully I click on the right one this time and don't click on the same one, but let's try this.
Since the 20th century, the industry development has propelled urbanization. However, municipal waste pollution is becoming increasingly serious. Currently, about 10 billion tons of waste is produced annually all over the world. 6 times the global grain output, 14 times the steel output. However, dumping and landfilling is still the mostly used way of waste disposal, which encroaches on the land, stinks, and produces a large number of pollutants such as bacteria, virus, methane, ammonia, and sulfide. Besides, the leachate produced by landfills is polluting the groundwater in the long run. Landfill is harmful to us and the later generations, so it becomes obsolete in more and more countries. Waste is a mislaid resource. How to manage waste properly and transform waste into useful products in a circular way is an important issue of considerable global concern, needing to be addressed promptly. To handle waste in a scientific and environmental friendly way can not only improve ecological environment, but create economic benefits. We have been devoting ourselves to environmental friendly new energy by learning advanced waste disposal techniques from best international companies and incorporating waste treatment characteristics in China and other countries of including. We have developed professional waste to energy techniques which can recycle and reuse the discarded materials. All emissions comply with relevant regulations and standards, even satisfying the EU standards, or even higher standards, bringing huge social benefits. deliver municipal solid waste to the unloading hall, and then store it in the waste bunker. Since newly delivered waste is high moisture content, it will be stored there for 3 to 7 days. During that period, the huge gripper turns it over repeatedly to make it evenly scattered, and microorganism in the waste will help the organic waste ferment, which makes itself easier to combust. There's a facility to extract air from the bunker and send to the boiler to make sure that the bunker is always under negative pressure, which can effectively prevent smelly air from releasing to the outside. In the process of storing the waste, moisture and organic matters in waste will filter out, forming leachate, which will flow into a pool to recycle. In the beginning, leachate flows into the first setting tank, where the precipitate and floater is removed. Then it goes to the adjusting tank, where the effluent is regulated. Then it enters the anaerobic tank, in which the organics is removed. After that, leachate, along with domestic sewage and industrial sewage, get transferred to the denitrification tank and nitrification tank for denitriding. At last, the effluent is delivered to the ultrafiltration and nanofiltration recycling system, discharging clean water, which reaches the Class A discharging standard for daily use within the plant, and realizing complete circulation and zero release. After storage, the waste is plunged to the hopper by the gripper and then is sent to the incinerator by the feeder. When it gets onto the first part of the incinerator, it will be dried rapidly under high temperature. When on the middle part, combustion begins and temperature there is beyond 850 degrees to make the waste burn completely, generating thermal energy to heat up steam, which is transported to steam turbine generator units to conduct power generation. When waste gets onto the final part of the incinerator, slag falls and secondary combustion is conducted for burnout. Slag is finally transported to brick factories and used and recycled as raw materials of construction and paving. In the process of combustion, the hazardous gases will be treated professionally and environmentally friendly. When the temperature in the incinerator goes up to above 850 degrees, it only takes 2 seconds to decompose dioxin and there is no dioxin produced again. Then the mixture gases get into the cooling tower to be cooled rapidly, and then are sent to the circling fluidization reactor to be treated at every stage. After the denitration treatment by the spray denitrification absorbent, the oxynitrite generates nitrogen and water. After the denitration, hydrogen chloride, hydrogen sulfide, and other acid gases go through the spray treating agent, generating calcium chloride, calcium sulfide, and other solid substances, which will fall down to the bottom and get into the ash bunker. After salinization, particulate heavy metals and dioxin will experience absorption through spray sorbent. The remaining gases get into the bag-type dust collector, where the powder will be filtered. The hazardous remains in the ash bunker will form stable composites after the treatment of chelation and solidification. The composites will be sent to the special landfill to be treated. At last, the pollutant emission becomes harmless, protecting the environment to the largest extent. We have been focusing on investing and operating waste-to-energy projects, manufacturing and supplying core equipment for waste-to-energy projects. With strong technical strength and thorough service system, we render our customers with package services of professional consulting, project design and engineering, equipment supply, investment and construction, operation and maintenance. Professional and tailored solutions will be provided. By far, we have invested over 10 waste-to-energy projects, disposing more than 11,000 tons waste daily. Upon completion of the projects, total daily power generation can meet the demands of 300,000 residents. We actively respond to the green development concept of China's 13th Five-Year Plan, continuously expand our overseas market and export more energy-saving and environmental-friendly equipment developed by ourselves, state-of-the-art techniques and services to more countries and regions. The The quality of our products and services are praised by customers at home and abroad. CWPC signed an APCC contract, a 36-megawatt waste-to-energy project, with Peterborough Green Energy Limited, amounting £346 million. VKE Chiangmai, 1x600 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Thailand. VKE Buslock, 1x600 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Thailand. WPC Colombo, 2x350 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Sri Lanka. Zigong, 2x400 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Sichuan, China. Guangyuan, 2x350 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Sichuan, China. Guangnan, 2x300 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Sichuan, China. Zhangye, 2x300 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Gansu, China. Jiangxi, 2x500 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Heilongjiang, China. Yuling, 2x400 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Guangxi, China. Sihui, 2x500 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Guangdong, China. Zhaoqing, 2x500 tons per day waste-to-energy project, Guangdong, China. Nowadays, waste pollution becomes increasingly severe. Classification and recycling of waste become an inevitable trend for the development of the world. Pollution can be effectively controlled from source to end by collecting and classifying waste from the beginning and treating it based on categories. From now on, we need to take care of every bottle, every battery, and every piece of discarded paper for our shared home and our only earth. Every company and citizen is obliged to protect the environment and reduce the pollution. Wisdom Power expects to work with you to create a more beautiful, green, and harmonious future, to make the sky clearer, the water cleaner, people's lives better.
So essentially, towards the last of that, what they basically said, it starts at home. And so if you understand and care about it and you want to recycle, you can turn all your trash into, quite literally a revenue source if you understand what the heck is going on there. And with that said, even old computers and cell phones and stuff like that, there are methods by which you can take that old computer, old cell phone, and you could push it down into its separate materials, and part of which you can use for gasification projects, to heat, like use your old computer. You can grind that thing down, you can get gold out of it, you can get silver out of it, you can get aluminums and copper out of it. At the same time, be able to use whatever's left over that you could burn to gasify, and if done properly, you ain't got no waste coming out the other end of that. We could actually design and engineer machines, like I said, that would work straight from your home, and every bit of trash that you had would get recycled. And by separating, the glass and the plastics and the papers and all that kind of stuff into different categories, then you would be able to recycle glass as a premium product, and plastics as a premium product if you wanted, and so on down the line. So you actually turn your trash into a source of revenue before it's all said and done. It'd be nice to get paid for the trash that you generate. There's actually countries out there that import other people's trash. And so with that said, I'm going to play another one. This kind of reiterates some of one of the processes of gasification. But it's really important that people understand there's two separate processes that we're talking about. One is incineration, and the other one is, incineration and gasification, but the other one is using plasma technology to do it in a much cleaner manner.
Welcome to the Waste and Energy Company in Amsterdam. More than 1.5 million tons of domestic and commercial waste is processed here each year on 6 incineration lines. Waste lorries and trains bring in the waste. It is important for optimal incineration that the waste is of a uniform quality. This is why it is mixed in the waste bunker. Large grippers then transfer the waste mixture into the hoppers of the furnaces. The waste is incinerated on grates. This is a continuous process, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Temperatures range between 1,000 and 1,200 degrees Celsius. This heat is not wasted. It turns water in the furnace walls into steam. This steam passes through the three turbines at high pressure, and the turbines drive a generator. This generates enough electricity to power 161,000 homes every year. After the electricity has been generated, the residual heat is used to produce heat for the city. This is piped to the district heating system in Amsterdam and provides warmth for 15,000 homes. Part of the waste is incombustible. This part which remains after incineration we call bottom ash. Technology developed together with Delft University of Technology is used to wash and recover metals from the bottom ash. Large amounts of iron and non-ferrous metals, such as aluminium and copper, are returned to the scrap metal trade for recycling. The rest is cleaned further until clean sand and a stony granulate remain. High-quality building materials which are used, for example, in concrete and asphalt. After the incineration process, the flue gases are cleaned. This is the longest part of the whole production process. And all done to ensure that almost nothing is released from the chimney. There are strict government regulations. Emissions from the waste to energy plant remain well under the limits, and we continue to work on improving this. The flue gases are cleaned in a number of stages. We aim to recover useful products at each of these stages. First of all, flying particles are removed using an electrostatic filter placed behind the furnace exhaust duct. This fly ash is used as a filling material in asphalt. Dioxins, heavy metals, and other environmentally harmful materials are then removed from the flue gases. Plaster and salt for de-icing are recovered in the process and used in industry. The water necessary for the process is recycled in a closed system. The installation therefore produces no wastewater. A sensor in the chimney constantly measures the quality of the discharge gases. The white plume of smoke is in fact nothing more than basically pure steam. Only about 1% of everything that enters the waste-to-energy plant is actually left over. This is completely unusable and is disposed of safely. 99% of the waste is converted into sustainable electricity, heat, and useful building materials.
So, you know, with that said, also using other technologies, you know, like even the simple rocket stove and, you know, the doggone catalytic converter style systems, you can reburn exhaust gases to use that fuel as well. So, you know, the thing is, if we could get the world to embrace these types of technology, which in some countries they actually have. Like I said, I think it's Sweden, which is one of the ones we're going to play here pretty soon, actually takes and imports trash. Now, there's people out there that, you know, poo-poo the idea, so to speak, because, you know, they, like I said, they don't want it in their backyard, or they, you know, think that it's going to be environmentally hazardous to burn trash And which is not the case. You know, nature burns stuff all the time. And, you know, we've been around for how many years? How many decades? Whatever. Nonetheless, if you take all these concepts, and there are more that could actually be added into the system, you get a perfect deal where you can actually recycle everything. There's nothing that's wasted. Zero waste. And I've said this so many times, nature wastes nothing, so I don't understand why we do. But using the plasma technology, you don't need to put near as much energy into the system as you'd actually think, because, you know, just at low voltages, plasma produces, low voltages can produce plasma, you know, by using the high voltage frequencies that, you know, can be generated, you know, with things like transistors switching, fast switching speeds and stuff that we have access to today. So this could be built on a smaller scale. It could be built on, you know, mega scale like these folks have been doing. And so the technology is already out there on the market. The question that you have to ask then, and at that point, because there's a lot of patents and copyrights on their particular systems, well, you know, who's going to be in charge? You'll still be paying the electric bill unless you take the, you know, sort of like the open source design and you build your own type of system and, you know, from that point on, generate your own electricity at home. And so we could actually build these things and, you know, not have to worry about patents and copyrights and all that. We could actually share this open source and build similar systems with maybe different types of, you know, technologies that are available. There's so many different technologies that are available to actually break down what would have otherwise been trash into useful products. So with that said, let's try this again. Hopefully I don't push the wrong button and start replaying the last one.
This is a waste-to-energy plant. It looks like a typical industrial building, but the process going on inside is quite special. A waste-to-energy plant converts our rubbish into electricity. Some plants supply heat to district heating systems, too. How does it work? The most widely used technology takes waste and burns it. The heat created is used to make steam, which in turn drives a turbine that generates electricity. The technique we're going to look at is widely used around the world. You'll notice that all the plants are very big. This is a process that works best on a large scale. Incinerating waste creates emissions and residues, and part of the process is focused on dealing with these. Achieving a high rate of efficiency with a low volume of byproducts is the aim. There are many systems of varying complexity, but they all work on the same principles. To set up this kind of waste-to-energy system, you need a stockpile of waste, a furnace, a boiler with heat exchangers, a water supply system, a turbine, and a generator. The waste is collected and delivered to the plant, where it is stored in large bunkers. It's transferred from the bunkers to a chute, leading to a moving grate in the furnace below the plant's boiler. The temperature in the furnace is very high. The gases in it are heated to over 850 degrees for at least 2 seconds to make sure all the waste gets burned completely to form stable end products. The residue left behind is called bottom ash and is non-hazardous. It's usually sent for recycling and is often used by the construction industry. Around 20% by weight of the waste ends up as bottom ash. The intense heat from the furnace rises into a series of chambers in the boiler. The idea is to capture the thermal energy as efficiently as possible. In the boiler are heat exchangers, a series of pipes filled with water, a bit like a household radiator. The heat vaporizes the water to form superheated high-pressure steam. This is sent to the turbine, where it encounters a series of turbine blades. The high-pressure steam forces the blades to rotate at high speed, driving the generator in order to make electricity. The electricity is fed to the power grid for use by industry and the local community. Water travels through the system in a closed-loop cycle. After passing through the turbines as steam, it is allowed to condense and is then returned to the heat exchangers to be heated again. Some waste-to-energy plants incorporate a district heating system into the cycle. The low-pressure steam from the turbine heats a second closed water loop, leading out into the community, for it in turn heats individual systems. Gas emissions from the boiler are known as flue gas. Flue gas must be treated before being released from the plant's chimney stack. It's processed using a series of absorption, scrubbing, and filtering systems. There are two other types of waste product. The first is the waste water that wet flue gas treatment plants produce. This is treated, then released. The second is fly ash, which contains toxic chemicals and consists of solid particles in the flue gas. Fly ash is sometimes treated, sometimes not, but either way it must be disposed of as hazardous waste. Fly ash represents less than 5% of the waste input of a waste-to-energy plant. Waste-to-energy, or energy-from-waste, technology is continually under development. Today, the most advanced plants using the technology we have described are up to 98% efficient in capturing the energy they generate. However, there is debate about the effects on health of incineration and its byproducts, and about the CO2 produced. The UK and the EU have stringent controls on emissions, and all emissions and residues are monitored closely in the UK by the government's Environment Agency. There are various other forms of waste-to-energy processes. Some examples are gasification, which produces combustible gases, anaerobic digestion, which produces methane-rich biogas, and pyrolysis, which produces bio-oil. Investment in waste-to-energy plants does depend on our continuing to produce burnable waste, which some might see as an incentive to create it. There is also debate about the indirect environmental impacts of making biofuels. Whatever the process used, the objective is to reduce volumes of waste, in particular to send as little as possible to landfill. The UK government estimates that waste-to-energy processes will account for 25% of municipal waste treatment by 2020. Waste-to-energy technologies recover value from our waste and are therefore a source of renewable energy.
All right, so you heard that lady talk about, you know, there's some concerns about that. Well, I think every single one of the concerns can be addressed. I think that countries that are most worried about it, if they want to pay attention to mad science, they might just find out there are better ways to do, all of it. That little noise you keep hearing in the background, so I'm constantly adjusting the volumes so they come out better on the other side there. Playing different videos have different volume levels. So anyway, let's move right along. But before I get that far, like I said, there are people out there that's going to fight against all this. But in reality, to put the trash in the ocean or put the trash in one of these waste-to-energy plants, which one would be the better option? I'm thinking waste-to-energy makes more sense, and if it's done properly, you ain't got no waste left over. So some of the ones we started with the plasma, and we're working our way back towards the just regular incineration versions of it. And both of them have, their good points to them. And as far as all the negatives can be resolved. Any type of, what would have been maybe a toxic material, whatever, can be treated and, stabilized and utilized. Every single material on this planet, nature recycles. Doesn't matter what it is. Nature recycles it all. And as far as plastic lasting for hundreds of thousands of years, that's not the case. But I won't get into that at the moment. But either way, if you could take all that plastic and you could turn it into something other than, pollution running around in the ocean, then you got a plus going on. And we can actually go out and recover, which some companies are actually out there recovering trash. And there are places in the world that they actually want you to send their trash because they use that trash for energy. So it might come a day when there might be a trash shortage. So wouldn't that be nice? Anyway, let's keep moving.
Elsinore, the site of historical battles and theatrical tumult. Here, Hamlet famously agonized over a decision. So while I'm in the neighborhood, I thought it's a perfect place for me to ask a burning question. To burn or not to burn, that is the question.
whether as wise in the earth to bury the junk and plastics of outrageous convenience, or to take energy from a sea of troublesome waste, and by burning, end them. Sorry, Shakespeare. Enjoying this beautiful city of islands, it's a much less picturesque part of this country of 10 million that I've come to see. Ever since I became known for going through everyone's bins, people have come up to me and told me we should copy what Sweden does with its waste. They burn a lot of it and turn it into energy.
Thank you.
This so-called waste-to-energy process is becoming the new go-to solution in Australia. So I've come here to find out if this would be a good fix for our garbage crisis. Our search starts at 5 a.m. on the Baltic Sea.
Sweden has become known as the darling of the waste world. According to the government, they recycle 99% of their waste. And this boat here is part of the story. They're so successful with their waste that now they're importing it from other countries. The Swee freighter left from England 3 days ago, and on board 3,000 tonnes of rubbish on its way to Västerås in Sweden, about to be burnt.
Sweden is turning other countries' trash into cash. The bales in this boat will earn them around $200,000. And all up, Sweden makes around $100 million a year from this trade. They mix the imports with local rubbish, and it's incinerated in 34 plants dotted around the country. They say this is better than Australia's approach of burying waste in landfill. The government here even calls it recycling. But I'm not so sure. So I've come to this plant at Västerås to see for myself.
Oh, wow. Look at this. That is a bit frightening.
This is supposed to be the stuff that's left over in the garbage after homes and businesses have taken out all the recycling.
What do you count this as, a renewable or recyclable?
Well, recyclable. Because this is recycling.
This is right.
We're turning it into energy, so we see it as a kind of recycling.
For me, recycling is taking something and turning it back into a product that can keep going.
Yeah, but we turn it into energy. We turn it into energy, so energy. That's the way we look at it.
That's not how I'd look at it. But the plant does try to remove some leftover recyclables.
We can take out metals, yeah. Parts of aluminum, glass, sand, smaller rocks, and etc.
In what's left, there's a lot of paper, wood, and also plastic.
The best thing would be, of course, to recycle the plastic.
Yeah.
But once it has entered the waste, once the plastic is waste, this is one good way of taking care of it.
Wow. That's where the actual action happens, eh? Wow, so this is the boiler. How hot is it?
900 degrees Celsius within the boiler.
And this is what it's all about. The waste is burnt, and it generates both electricity and hot water for heating the town in winter.
So how much waste can this burn in an hour?
60 tons an hour.
60 tons of waste an hour.
Yes.
But what's left over? In Australia, arguments against burning waste have centred on the question of toxic emissions.
So can you guarantee that there's not carcinogens and that kind of thing? Well, what are you actually pumping out there?
There are chemicals in it, of course, but they are according to the regulations that we have to follow.
So does the Swedish government monitor what comes out
of
there?
Oh yes, they do. And we have the highest demands in all Sweden regarding what comes out of the chimney.
How does it take everything out? What happens to them if it takes out all of these toxins? What does it do with them?
Well, a lot of the toxins are taken out in the burning process. So they're destroyed in the high temperature. It's about 900 degrees Celsius.
So the actual heat of that boiler makes a difference to getting rid of the emissions?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
But also then we wash the fumes.
You wash the fumes?
We wash the fumes.
Keeping emissions clean does not come cheap. This plant cost $500 million to build and $35 million a year to run. But it has some nice little earners too. It's not just paid to take rubbish. The electricity is worth $10 million a year. Central heating, though, is the big one. With 900 kilometres of underground piping to nearly all of the city's homes, they rake in $65 million a year. But while the Swedes have found a way to make money from garbage, there are a few things that are still bugging me. I was really surprised at how much plastic there was in the mix at the waste-to-energy plant. How does this fit with Sweden's green energy story?
Sweden banned landfill many years ago, so if I don't finish my lunch, it's not going to end up going into landfill and turning into methane gas, which of course is a greenhouse gas. But the big question I have, what happens to those things like these plastic packaging that does end up being thrown away? What's the effect if you're burning plastic?
Did you fly over the archipelago as well?
To find out, I'm meeting with Professor Jørgen Finnveden, who studied waste to energy for many years.
What is the effect, in terms of emissions, of burning plastics?
Well, you get CO2 emissions, you get carbon dioxide emissions, like if you incinerate oil.
I can't believe I'm saying this, because I think we come from Australia where most things are buried, and I hate the idea of landfill, but... Mm. Is it sometimes worse to be burning plastics than actually burying them?
Yes, it can be, at least in the short term, because if you incinerate plastics, you get the carbon dioxide emissions immediately, whereas if you bury them, it will take a long time before they degrade. But there can be other problems with landfill.
All right, so let's pause this for a second, because he's talking about these plants releasing CO2 emissions, which once again, CO2 can be turned into fuel as well, so... By using technologies like the plasma, you don't have that issue to begin with. But even to this extent, taking the exhaust off of there and then reburning that exhaust, you can recycle that. And by the time it comes out, there are no what they want to call CO2 emissions. So let's keep rolling.
It takes up space. You can have leachate coming out of toxic chemicals, etc.
To what extent is recycling rather than burning beneficial?
Recycling is almost always, there can be exceptions, but almost always more beneficial, both from an energy perspective and from the perspective of emissions.
Those that oppose waste to energy also say it gives an easy out for waste and discourages recycling. But Sweden sees itself as a leader in the recycling world. So I'm keen to see how the locals are keeping these resources away from the furnaces.
Hello,
hi.
I'm Craig. How are you?
I'm Sarah. Nice
Sarah,
to meet you.
Sarah, how are you?
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Vilda.
Good to meet you, Vilda.
Well, great. Come on in and I'll show you the kitchen.
Thank you.
I've arranged to meet Sarah Jarnhead and her family, who have been kind enough to let me see what they do with their garbage.
So this is where we keep the dry.
Oh, this is the recycling.
Oh, yeah, this is where that magic happens. I get plastic, we get the plastic here.
So that's any kind of plastic you put in there?
Yeah, the dry plastic.
They go to a lot of trouble to sort waste into different categories here.
And then we have here we put glass and batteries and cans.
And they have a bottle refund scheme too.
Yeah, a little bit money off this one. So this is good for the kids.
I see you got the kids to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So then they get the money for that and they can buy an ice cream.
Fielder and her brother get the message at home and also at school. Recycling is good and everyone has to do it.
Hey!
Hey guys.
Hello. Craig, how are you?
I'm Richard, I'm fine.
Richard, how are you?
Wow.
It's just like Australia, everything's put in plastic now. This is starting to feel a bit more like home. Sweden seems to have the same over-packaging problems I looked at in Australia.
That is the good bananas, so they really have the bad bananas without the plastic, but this expensive one they have in plastic for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. But this is different. Their food waste is collected separately and turned into a fuel for buses and cars.
It's in the other bin. Okay. So there's not much in there.
No.
What's left, and it isn't much, is destined to be burnt. But there's a neat incentive to keep that down to a minimum too.
The sensor on the bill that sends when you empty
the bill. Yeah, so it goes this, and then they send the bill.
So if you put your bin out less,
yeah,
you pay less as well.
Yeah.
That's great. Like most Swedes, they don't mind the idea of burning waste to generate energy.
I mean, it's better than burying it, I think, because burying it, I think, is quite crazy.
Yeah. I think you get something else.
Yeah, I think it's good because they heat up the houses and that.
Do you think that those of us that are burying it, we're crazy?
You're crazy.
We're crazy about it.
Crazy nation.
All right. But the recycling isn't done yet.
Yeah. Can you help us, Mario?
We have to take it to the local collection bins.
So how long is this worth? About a month or more than a month?
Yeah, maybe a month.
A month or so?
Yeah, I would say so. Come on, go back. Here's Vala. Hey, dog.
Bye.
The bins are only a few minutes away, and we're not the only ones doing our duty.
So how often do you come down to recycle yourself?
At least once a day.
Once a day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everything is in plastic today, and yes. I think it's just stupid. I don't know if it's recycling or they just burn it.
Well, it's interesting. So you actually bring it down here, but you don't know if they actually recycle it.
Yeah, but I do. I think I do right, but I don't know what happens in the end.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you say that. We want to know that too. But it's
you find out.
We'll find out. We'll tell you. Yeah.
And you tell me.
Yeah, we'll tell you.
Well, Richard and Sarah and so many other Swedes seem to be really conscientious about their sorting and their recycling. And it's great to see. I mean, one woman turned up here today on a bicycle to do it. But it's a lot more effort. I mean, it's not just picked up at your curbside. So the thing I really want to know is this leading to higher rates of recycling? Because if it's not, it's leading to higher rates of recyclables being burnt. In Sweden, the producers that make the packaging are responsible for its recycling. The rates for glass and paper are sky high. But for plastics, the thing I'm most concerned about, I've heard there are some real problems. So I'm on my way to visit Sweden's biggest plastics recycler. They haven't been returning our calls. For this long journey south, I've perhaps unwisely chosen a tiny blue electric car. Well, I like the idea that my car is partly fueled by waste. That doesn't stop me fearing I'm going to run out of charge well before my destination.
I've got range anxiety, and I don't know how to charge a car. I think I have to be some kind of registered user or something. I don't have to eat McDonald's to get my car charged. Hi, do you speak English? Oh, thank you. That's great. I've never charged an electric car before. I'm at a Fortum charge station at a McDonald's. how do I pay for it and get it to charge?
Yeah,
I've done that. Okay, and yeah, it's working. It's charging, thank you. Thank you very much for your help. Now what do I do?
After 300 meters, turn right.
With full charge and indigestion, we finally arrive at the plastics recycling company called Swerek.
Okay, so it's just over here. Definitely found our plastics recycling place. There's absolutely mounds of it here.
Someone pause this here for a second.
Swerek meant to recycle 80%.
All right, so basically, from start to finish of today's show, I've showed, both what they say is the positive and what they say is the concerns and the negative. So that you get both sides of the story. For every technology out there, there's going to be questions about what to do with what in the process. But what I'm saying is that we have all the technology necessary to do both of these projects right here and have zero amounts of waste by the time it's all said and done. Whatever does end up coming out the chimney pipe is all going to be all natural and not something you're going to have to worry about where toxins are leaching out. Like that one, I guess he was a professor or something like that, was talking about, worried about, leaky wastewater leaking out and basically leaching into the ground and stuff like that. They have closed-loop systems for that. And so, with that said, by the time it's all treated, everything's natural by the time it comes out. If you actually think about how nature does it, that's exactly what's going on with nature. They figured out ways to filter like nature does, and they figured out ways to clean all this stuff up. So where I can't take credit for, all these ideas out there, because I'm not the only one out there who's been saying this stuff for a long time, but, when it comes down to plasma technology, my research has found some really interesting things that can be done with plasma. And basically all you're doing is taking one form of energy, speeding it up, slowing it down, or whatever, and, using what would have otherwise been the waste byproduct, which is heat, and making electricity, doing other things, heating your house. The majority of what it takes to heat your house, the majority of your electric bill is in heating and air conditioning. And once you understand these processes, there's ways to engineer heating and air conditioning units that won't rely on the same processes, with Freon and stuff like that. You can use, thermal heat exchangers to, do the same exact job that a compressor and a refrigerator would have been doing, or the gas like Freon and stuff like that. There are methods to, use the expanding hot gases and cool them down rapidly to get cooling, vice versa. So, with that said, this type of technology makes me happy because people are actually, a lot longer than I thought, paying attention to some of the things I've been talking about for years. Now, I wasn't the only one back there talking about these things, but nonetheless, it still makes me happy to know that everything I said out there didn't just go in one ear out the other, that you can actually take all these trash and, you can turn it back into usable energy. And using the, physics and science and mechanics that we already have access to, those technologies combined, we can build home units that will do the same exact job on a smaller scale. I mean, you don't have to burn tons and tons of trash to produce enough energy to run your home, heating and cooling both. So, you know, I'm really excited about this waste of energy project. That if you've been paying attention for today's show, you've heard that there's a bunch of different nations, you know, doing it. Some are dragging their feet because people have concern. But a lot of these concerns end up being like, you know, people concerned that solar panels are going to drain all the energy from the sun. It don't make any sense. It's not scientifically plausible. But nonetheless, it is a move forward, and it gets you closer to what I like to call free energy, where you're actually using what nature's already provided and learning from that, and, you know, not producing any more waste. You're actually producing usable products by the process of, you know, treating all this trash and then turning it into energy, like the metals and, you know, the glass and stuff like that. All of that can be recovered, and all of it can be reused, and that's exciting. So let's finish here.
Percent of this, but an audit was done a couple of years ago and found out they were recycling less than 40%. The rest of it was being incinerated. Let's see if things have changed.
Hello, how are you? I'm wondering if we could speak to Leif Castle. My name's Craig Rucastle. I'm coming from Foreign Correspondent.
Though very polite, Swerik isn't keen to talk.
Well, sadly, it looks like no one's willing to talk to us about how recycling is done here. Hello, how are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Can you turn off the camera?
Turn off the camera? Yeah, sure.
What are you doing?
We're keen to talk to Leif Castle, but he's not here.
No.
And so we're just saying
we haven't given you any permission to
it's okay, it's just,
to feel.
Well, that didn't get us very far, so I'm heading further up the chain of command. This is FTI. They're the industry group that organises most of the packaging recycling in Sweden and contracts Swerik. Surely they know how much plastic is recycled and how much is burned.
When Swedish people are putting all this plastic into recycle, and then, for instance, Spheric was only recycling about 38% of it and the rest was being incinerated, that's nowhere near enough recycling, is it?
Firstly, they broke our contract, and that's not okay, of course, and there was a very, very harsh discussion between us, and we were not very happy with that.
How much plastic packaging is meant to be recycled?
The government says it should be 30%. And we are up on 47 in Sweden.
But it turns out, those figures aren't what's being recycled, only what's being collected.
Does that have to be recycled, or is there only a percentage
it's,
that has
it's
to be recycled?
What's sent to be sorting.
To be sorted.
Sorted for recycling. Okay. And it doesn't state how much that need to be recycled.
Though. So what proportion, then, of the plastic packaging you get
I don't
do
have
you
that.
Burn?
I don't
Not
have that.
Sure.
So the complaint you're kind of hearing about right now is basically, you know, because they're pretty successful at making that into energy, they're burning more than they're recycling, and so that's what this guy's concern was, that they want to be able to recycle more plastic to turn into useful products. But, you know, it's a give and take deal kind of thing there. You know, if you got people that are concerned about, you know, them burning too much plastic, well, those particular people can take their recyclables to companies that are actually going to turn them into useful products. So this isn't even a problem. I mean, the guy makes it sound like it's a problem, but in reality, it's not a problem, because if you got a majority of the people, or even 50-50 split of people that one send it to the energy department and the other send it to the recycling department, then you'll get a balance in there. Besides all that, there is so much doggone garbage in this world that I don't think it's going to be an issue if you're ever running out of plastic materials that can be recycled, because they're constantly making new. And so, you know, with that said, even there's a solution in that right there. So, you know, this conversation that you're hearing between these two right here is pretty much insignificant in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, there's always going to be enough plastic to recycle. Rubbers and tires and, you know, rubber of tire or whatever, you know, all the different materials for making all kinds of household goods and furnitures and houses themselves, you know, everything. There ain't nothing in this world that cannot be recycled, period.
While FTI are keen to promote their plastic collection rates, the figures that really matter are those that were reported to the government, which show that less than a third was being recycled, and the rest, 70%, was burnt. And when you look at Sweden's total plastic usage, not just packaging, it's worse. A recent report found that a whopping 84% is ending up at the incinerators. None of this is making much of a stir in Sweden. In fact, waste to energy isn't really an issue here. But across the other side of this famous bridge, there is a storm brewing in the rest of Europe. I'm meeting zero waste campaigner Jean-Marc Simon in Copenhagen, in the shadow of a controversial new waste to energy plant surrounded by apartments. To quell local opposition to this $860 million plant, the designers even included an artificial ski slope on its roof. At a state-of-the-art plant like this, Jean-Marc's concerns aren't so much about toxic pollutants, but the burning of resources.
It's a huge investment, and we have to think, like, where do we want to put the money? Into preserving resources or into destroying resources? This is a very efficient machine to destroy resources. And I would say, like, probably it will capture most of the pollutants, but it's still a machine to destroy resources. Mm. What we have.
So they keep using the word destroy resources. In reality, you're not destroying resources. You're just turning it into other chemistry, just like nature does. So, you know, This is one of the reasons why this hasn't taken on worldwide, is because people think when you're burning this plastic, when you're incinerating this plastic, you're actually destroying resources. But you're in reality producing other resources in the process of the deal. Plus, you're producing energy at the same exact time. So you're not losing anything. Nature has more than enough crude oil and raw materials to produce as much plastic, and there are even ways that we can actually make plastics that are, you know, biodegradable and so on, that you know, you're not going to run out of resources. This is what I keep trying to tell everybody. It is impossible for you to run out of any material on this world. No matter what you do to it, you're not going to run out of it. All you're doing is changing the molecular structure, and you're putting it back into the system that recycles it anyway. There's nothing that we've ever made that nature cannot deteriorate. There's nothing that we ever made that nature cannot recycle. Some materials might take a little bit longer for nature to break down, but nonetheless, they can still be broken down. They are broken down by natural ways. So, with that said, you know, the people that are out trying to poo-poo these ideas, on one hand, they're talking about wanting to save the environment and they want to save resources, but they're not getting the big picture. They're not stepping back far enough to understand. Number one, if it's being incinerated, it's not ending up in the ocean in the conventional sense like it had before, that it's cleaned and turned back into natural products that, you know, if do make it into the ocean, aren't going to be in the bellies of fish and birds and stuff like that. Plus, we can actually clean all the mess that's already in the oceans and use the same processes to make it back to where, you know, it's usable again, where it becomes a resource in itself. Your garbage is a resource. That's what I've been trying to say for I don't know how many years, but when you hear conversations such as this one right here, it's understandable why people want to drag their feet in bureaucracies and red tape and all that kind of stuff. So let's keep rolling.
proven is that for a lot less money, you can preserve resources, you can invest in local jobs, and like keep the money in the community.
The EU seems to be taking a similar view, bringing in new laws to divert more waste into recycling. Rates right across Europe will have to rise from the current 50% up to 65% by 2035. And the materials will have to be genuinely recycled. Collection figures won't do anymore.
So, now the EU or whatever involved in the situation, making more red tape, jacking your electric bill up when it's not necessary. This is what these folks don't get. And most people, you know, listening in probably already understand what I'm saying, but those folks are just joining in. By using these types of processes, you're not hurting the environment, and you're not hurting the economy. These folks think that, you know, that by using majority of this, what would have otherwise been trash for energy, that they're not going to get enough recyclables out there to make a difference and keep people working, you know, making new fresh bottles and all that stuff, which is crazy because all over the world, right, especially right now, there are people whose recycling is just, you know, just awful. And it ends up in third world countries with all kinds of toxic trash in it. And they got kids digging through this garbage. And so, you know, there are places where it would open up new markets for other people to quite literally sell their trash to other countries. And so you're not going to ever run out of stuff. That's the whole key there. That's the whole thing why people just don't seem to understand. You know, you want on one hand zero emissions, you want green renewable alternative energy sources, and when it's laid down there in front of you on a silver platter, you then turn want to complain that it's not good enough for you, it's not going to make you enough money. We're talking greed here. We're not talking about, you know, necessity of saving the environment and stuff like that. We're talking flat-out greed, money changing hands, taxes, and all that kind of stuff. So people are concerned that it's either going to dig into their wallet in the fossil fuel, what they like to call fossil fuel. There is no such thing as fossil fuel, but nonetheless, what they like to call fossil fuel industry, they don't want this cutting into their wallet, just like any other industry wouldn't want you cutting into their wallet. So, you know, this is why we got such a jam going on.
So it is clear that in the future we're going to see incinerators closing down in Europe because they're going to have less and less waste to burn, and recycling is going to go up.
Are there other countries that have gone the other way, have kind of invested in increasing the recycling rather than waste to energy, for instance?
Yeah, we have examples in Europe where we are seeing cities actually being a lot more advanced than Copenhagen, with a lot less investment, get a lot further. Like, for example, Ljubljana, the capital of Slovenia, 500,000 people, they don't have an incinerator, they are recycling in the order of 65%, which is like more than twice as much as Copenhagen, with a lot less investment, and they're recycling a lot more.
The key is you can do both. You can do both and you can do it efficiently.
Heading back to Sweden, I wonder if I should have visited a country that's focused on recycling instead. Probably a bit late to ask for a side trip to Slovenia. For Australia, it's a question of where we invest our money. Waste to energy is an expensive option. And one thing has been troubling me about how suitable the Swedish model is for Australia. Every plant I visit talks more about heating than electricity. So I've got one final question, and I've found the person that can answer it.
In Australia, we don't have the heating capacity. We don't have central heating, district heating, or even district cooling, or anything like that. Does that mean it's less efficient for Australia to invest in waste to energy, for instance?
Absolutely, that is the case. Unfortunately, if you only use the electricity, of course, the energy efficiency in the plant will be much lower than what you can find in Sweden and in other parts of the world where you also have district heating. So that will make the whole calculation less efficient. But still, you have to consider what's the alternative.
It's becoming very clear that incineration is not a one-size-fits-all solution.
So let's pause this for a second. I'm sure Australians could use AC, and I'm sure that they can also use heat as well. But nonetheless, you heard that Sweden's pretty much leading the pack, as far as I'm concerned, in clean, renewable, alternative energy, because they've built infrastructures that will utilize every bit of the energy that is released by this type of deal, plus being able to recycle as well. While they're not recycling, you know, the amounts of plastic that people would love them to recycle, they're also getting out other materials that are just as valuable and just as important. So, you know, like I said, it's a give and take. But, you know, if you listen to this guy here talk about, you know, Australia, whether or not they should invest in this kind of technology, if they wanted to build the infrastructure, they'd get the same exact results. But the problem is, you know, you got, once again, you got the people that poo-poo the idea, and you got the red tape and the bureaucracy, the politics and greed from different industries that's going to, you know, basically hinder the process. Okay, so let's finish this one here out.
Charging a car at a waste-to-energy plant, it kind of feels like, oh, I'm burning trash to make this car move. But the reality is a bit more complex than that. Here in Sweden, it's summer now, and most of the furnaces have been turned off here. And that's because nearly 90% of the energy from waste-to-energy in Sweden is used for heating. So what does that mean for Australia? Are we going to put in cooling systems? Which can happen. But it requires us to dig up all the streets in our cities and put complex sets of pipes taking the cooling to all the houses. I don't know if we're the kind of country that's going to do that kind of thing. I mean, we'd probably end up with something like cooling to the node. None of this bothers the Swedes as they head for their popular midsummer festival. Sarah, Richard and the kids have joined the throng to dance like frogs and frolic around the maypole.
I always thought it was a cross, but then I learned that somebody told me that it's actually an old tradition from the Vikings that we cherish fertility. And so actually it's not a cross, it's a huge stick that we dance around and celebrate fertility. And but I'm not sure that it's true, but that's what everybody says. So, and I love the idea of it. I think it's beautiful, because this is when everything starts growing. And so yeah, it's amazing. It's a crazy Swedish tradition that we do.
This is the height of summer. It's a time for schnapps and songs before they head into the long, bitter winter, where during 18-hour nights with sub-zero temperatures, they'll be warmed by burning the nation's waste. Not far from the maypole and the dancing, Stockholm's Högdalen waste-to-energy plant chuffs away, sitting side by side with a recycling yard. Here it seems like the perfect place to return to that burning question.
The more I've travelled around Sweden, the more I've realised they're very much interconnected. Waste to energy is not just a simple solution to our waste problems. If you don't sort out your recycling, then basically you're going to be burning a lot of plastic, which is just a low-grade oil. At best, well-done waste to energy can be a step up from landfill, but it's still very much at the bottom of the scale, and you've got to invest big time into recycling and avoiding waste in the first place.
So there you go, that's pretty much a hit piece on it, but nonetheless, it had to be said. So, you know, that's what people's concern is, that you're basically burning what was originally a petroleum product, and you're still actually burning, you know, the equivalents of what they'd like to call a fossil fuel, but not to the extent that if they didn't understand what the process was, they're not only doing it cleaner, but they're ending up with other products, and they're resolving a solution such as not having to take it to landfills and basically bury it, where in that case it just becomes a hazard instead of an energy resource. So those are, you know, both sides of the story. as far as that goes. And if you go all the way back to the very first one I played, which was plasma technology, that's the best case. But you also heard man talk about how, you know, Australia wasn't going to want to dig up their roads and put in piping and stuff like that for you know, heating and cooling and stuff. So, you know, for them, would it be a viable option? Well, it would if they wanted to do it exactly like Sweden does. And even during the times when they didn't need the heat portion, they could still have the electricity, and they could balance out both recycling and you know, the incineration portion to compensate one another, to complement one another, as opposed to being a, you know, what the one guy was saying about you know, burning up resources. So you get the best of both worlds out of that. Plus, you know, the recyclables that you are able to put back on the market, you could then in turn use to pay the funding necessary to build the, you know, the, you know, gasifying systems, and even go to the higher tech plasma systems. So with that said, let me see if I push the right one this time.
It's time now for our focus report. And this Friday, we're talking about recycling. When it comes to waste management and environmental awareness, Sweden is the world's heavyweight champion. The country recycles nearly all its waste, and in the process, also generates electricity and heating. France 2's Claire Colnay has this report, voiced by Nicholas Rushworth.
Sweden has turned its waste into gold.
We're doing good business, and at the same time we feel good about it because we're helping protect the environment.
Out of the 4.4 million tons of Swedish waste each year, just 1% is dumped in landfill. How do the Swedes manage to do that? How come they are so far ahead of other European countries in the recycling business? This shopping centre, 100 kilometres from Stockholm, looks no different to any other. Crockery and glassware, furniture, electrical goods are for sale. But all the items are in fact being recycled in a unique project. These computers, for example, are being repaired one by one for resale.
And here you go, it's working again.
Okay,
and here comes a DVD player, and it also has a VHS tape player and recorder. And is it working? Okay, yeah, it works.
I'm moving house, so there are many things that I won't be bringing along with me.
That's how this treasure here turned up.
Yes, and someone else can use them, and that's a good thing.
A whole culture of recycling has sprung up in Sweden. This Frenchman, Jan, has been living in the country for 12 years and has adapted. He pays special care to sort all his kitchen waste.
Take this banana peel, for instance. It goes here, the special bag for organic waste.
The city of Stockholm supplies rubbish bags free of charge. The main rule is to separate the waste properly.
This here is the bag for all the plastic waste. And I put the rest in here. Paper, magazines, glass and metal bottles.
Consumers make a trip to a recycling centre on average twice a week. There's one nearby in every district, each with 7 recycling bins.
What we do for the environment just becomes part of the routine, and that is a source of satisfaction. Each person has their own role to play in environmental protection.
Swedish people bring in around 480 kilograms of waste per person per year. Half of it, metal, plastic, glass, goes directly for recycling. The other half also gets a second life.
Anything that cannot be recycled is transported to power generation plants. From household rubbish to used packaging, in all, 750,000 tons of waste is treated each year. Huge pincers drop waste into incinerators that turn it into energy.
We have electricity producing turbines, and in the process we also generate heat, which is made available to Stockholm residents. 100,000 people get heating that way, and 200,000 people benefit from the electricity we generate.
The power generation causes hardly any pollution. Authorities say CO2 emissions are 2 times lower than the limits allowed. The system works so well that to keep incinerators working flat out, Sweden treats waste from other countries.
10% of the waste our company treats here is, in general, imported.
Where do they come from?
Mostly from the United Kingdom.
Sweden imported 1.4 million tons of waste in 2016. Waste exporting countries paid 36 euros per ton, bringing in more than 50 million euros.
We see waste.
Listen to that there for a second. Is that not only are they recycling their own trash, they're getting paid by other countries, some of which are poo-pooing the idea, but nonetheless are still willing to pay these folks to accept their trash and to burn it. So, if you listen to what the Swedish people are pretty doggone brilliant. They're getting paid to burn the trash. They're making money to burn the trash by selling people electricity that they use to burn the trash. And so I'm pretty positive by now that their plants, their power plants, are already paid off, because if you're getting several million dollars from different countries to take their trash and then recycling it and incinerating it at the same time, now it'll get to the point, like I said, if this was to catch on with everybody, everyone out there would be basically running low on trash, because it's a resource. So, with that said, it's hard to think that your garbage bag that you throw in the trash can and then it goes over to the doggone truck and then goes to a landfill, it's hard to think that that would actually be a valuable resource, but when in fact it really is a valuable resource. Every single bit of what you throw in your garbage can be recycled.
As a commodity, a product one can sell or buy, just like other forms of energy. Waste is an efficient source of energy, and it's also a very good way to reduce our environmental impact.
Sweden wants to go further. It hopes to reuse 100% of its waste within 3 years and have no landfill sites at all.
And when it comes down to landfill sites, if a person really wanted to, you could actually dig up those old landfill sites and sort all that stuff and once again use it as an energy source. So, there's a, like I said on a previous show way back when, was there's a landfill that used to go by not too far from me. It's probably about maybe 45 minutes away from me, maybe an hour max, depending on traffic. But nonetheless, you get down there, and back in the old days, you could see the garbage from the street, and it stunk up to all get out, so you had to hold your nose when you drove by there. Well, years later, I drive by there, and the thing looks like a doggone city park. It's got all flowers and stuff out front and landscaping and all that. And even though you could see trash trucks driving in and out of there, you couldn't tell that it was ever a dump. You couldn't tell it was ever a landfill. Well, that's because these folks realized that what they were bringing in, there was money to be made, because there were, valuable metals in there. There were, recyclables and even the biological, food and stuff like that could be turned into gases that they could then in turn run their equipment with. So they didn't even have to pay for the majority of their fuel at any given time, because they had all this trash coming in. Plus, they were actually paying people, or people were actually paying them to take their trash away from the curb. So they were getting government subsidies, they were getting money from the people, they were able to make their business clean and renewable and profitable, just by understanding that not only recycling the garbage and using it for different raw materials, but using it for fuel as well. It was a brilliant idea, and it worked well for them. So if other people were to adopt those same things, well, then you wouldn't be hearing all this controversy about how we're polluting our planet and we're wasting resources and such. So let's keep rolling here.
In the studio by our guest, Fleur Bellingen is director of Zero Waste France. Hello, thank you very much for being with us. How long has it taken Sweden to get to this stage first?
Well, it's a pretty long story. I think it started in the 70s with the first ambitious recycling programs. But it's in some other countries, progress is quicker. For example, in Italy, we have some regions who are improving very fast. Like in 2-3 years, they can like reverse their statistics, which is pretty interesting for us.
That's inspiring, absolutely. Now, it's not all rosy, or perhaps I should say green, for Sweden. For instance, your organisation rejects the idea that burning waste counts as recycling. Why?
Yes, well, it's pretty simple. Burning waste is just destroying material versus recycling. Its goal is to reuse material and reuse resources. So we cannot consider burning waste as a form of circular economy, which is the idea that you should be in a cycle.
But isn't it creating energy?
Yeah, well, recovering heat is the least you could do when you decide to burn waste. And also the problem with Sweden, as mentioned in the video report, is that they need to import waste from other countries so that the incineration plants are not empty. It means that waste travels thousands of kilometers to be burned in another country, which is not exactly what environmental standards today should lead to.
So this is a way perhaps of not recycling as much as they could?
Yeah, well...
Okay, let's pause this here. Also, they're talking now as a complaint about how by importing it, that the ship bringing it over can actually cause more pollution than what you get whenever it gets on the other side. So they don't have enough trash of their own to burn, so they're bringing it in from somewhere else to keep the plants going. Which, in my view, is pretty ridiculous, because just as you could build a plant that could recycle and turn that into energy, you could also turn those ships into machines that will actually, while it's being moved from point A to point B, one country to the next, it's actually beginning to treat that material, and it's using portion of that material on the way as the fuel source to get the thing from point A to point B. For example, if you had a hydrogen generator on that ship, and any liquid which would be down in that trash could actually be used for hydrogen power, and then all the rest of it would be turned into, you know, just a portion of it would be turned into SIM gases that would actually produce heat and gases that would work with that system as well. So a long time ago, I was talking to a guy that was driving a trash truck. I said, I got a design. If you want to pay attention to it, you could actually turn that trash truck into a machine that would, when you put the bag of trash in, would instantaneously start grinding it up. It starts separating the materials. It'd separate the metals from the plastics and the paper and the liquids. You'd have a system where the bottom of that truck would actually gather up all the liquids that would come up out of that trash bag once it was all ground up into different materials. And by grinding this material using the actual trucks driving forward, as you're moving this truck, it's working almost like an old tractor's brush hog. It's chopping it all up and grinding it down, and it's putting it into a different state where now you can easily use different physics, like magnetics to suck metals one way, static electricity to suck materials the other way, and, you know, liquid obviously to fall down to the bottom, and use this truck to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. So by the time you get to your place where you're going to recycle it, you have one bin that is full of metal, you got one bin that's full of paper and plastics, and you got one tank that's full of water that now needs to be treated, that you could separate even the biological from, to make different types of gases that you could actually, in reality, do the same process while you're driving that truck, and some of the methane's produced would actually go into a storage tank that then in turn could actually run that truck for part of the time while you're driving it. So where there's a will, there's a way. You could get these vehicles to not be, putting out emissions and still be doing part of the job by the time it gets to the other side. You got premium recyclables ready to go. So, all the ideas. For every negative that they can put out, there's a positive that could be, you know, a solution to the problem, the so-called problem.
In Sweden, the recycling has not really improved in the last 10 years. And maybe incineration is the one reason for that. Whereas in Italy, as I was saying, we have seen great progress, and some regions in Italy are really have performances that are really higher than Sweden, like 70% or 80% of recycling today. So it shows that it's absolutely possible, and I think that if Sweden was not so much involved in incineration, they could reach easily those standards.
What about here in France? What's the situation?
They could do both.
Well, in France we are not as advanced in general. I mean, regarding recycling, we are about 40%, but we are also improving, and we will be improving in the next few years, also thanks to composting, because this is something that really makes a difference, because this is 30% of our garbage, and if we take it out and we compost it, for example, of course it reduces the amount of waste that needs to be incinerated or landfilled.
But that demands a general effort, but also an individual effort. How hard is it to change mentalities on that kind of theme?
Well, I think that...
Pause this one more time. All right, look. See, in the process of essentially poo-pooing the idea, what they're neglecting to think about is that you still have materials coming in via shipments from overseas, you know, and normal trade. You still have materials coming in. So there's constant flow of materials coming in. Not to mention, when you're talking about how, you know, you got all kinds of different landscaping or whatever, people cutting down, you know, old dead trees or even mowing their lawn, all of those resources now could be utilized in the same process of gasification. So there's no way you're going to run out of stuff. That's the problem. You're talking a difference between, oh, well, we're going to burn all these resources and we're not going to have enough for the recycling, which is it's wrong. If you get a happy balance between the two, you get the best of both worlds. You get enough recycled to give you raw materials for plastic. You get enough incinerated or gasified. Plus, you got all the extras when nature, you know, does a nice storm and rips down a bunch of trees and stuff like that. Those can compensate for times when you don't have enough garbage being imported in from somebody else. So there's always going to be fuel sources. There's always going to be enough energy to go around for all nations who actually take all these bits of what Sweden's already done and take the good pieces from what other people out there are doing. You can still get enough recycling and the best of both worlds out of this whole entire deal. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to play these particular podcasts, so that you get the best of both stories, because if I just tell one side of the deal, like, you know, plasma gasification is the way to go, and using hydrogen technology on top of that, and gas turbines for energy generation, all three of which you can get energy generation as far as electricity goes, but you also get the byproducts of heat that you can use for not only heating but cooling as well, because you can use heat to produce cold. So that's all basic physics, basic science, basic mechanics. So by nipping it in the bud all the negatives at the same exact time while telling you the positives there, you see that if people was to actually take the time to look at the entire big picture, this might be a negative if that's all you did in one direction, but if you was combining all these things together, you could build and engineer the perfect systems. Zero waste and, you know, clean renewable alternative energy using what otherwise would have been garbage that ended up in the landfill, the rivers, or even the ocean for that matter. So a little bit of common sense dictates that if you understand the basic physics and science and mechanics of what's going on that nature has already proven, then you can mimic those systems. You can engineer them perfectly for whichever environment you're in, whether you're in a predominantly colder climate or maybe majority heating, already hot climate. You can use all these physics to engineer specifically, you know, the difference between what Sweden's environment and weather is as opposed to Australia's environment and weather and Canada and UK and all the other different places that we talk about on a regular basis. So where there's a will, there's a way. All you have to do is understand just a little bit of basic science and physics, and it all makes perfect sense. You do exactly what nature does, and nature wastes nothing. Like I said, no matter what you do to any material on this world, you will not destroy it. You cannot get rid of it. All you do is change the molecular structure and you put it into what nature has already broken it down to naturally by using physics, such as lightning. Lightning will strike a tree and what happens? It'll catch fire, but there's other things that are going on in that process scientifically that nature needs. These little things, these little chemicals, little bits and pieces to make new trees and plants and, you know, everything that you see out there. And so if we understand this and we mimic what nature's already done, there is no environmental hazard to be had. Now, of course, it takes a lot of money to build some of these plants. Granted, that's it always takes money to build a nuclear power plant. It takes money to build a coal-fired power plant. And for even the coal industry out there, you can retrofit these coal-fired power plants to do the same exact job and recycle their exhaust along with a little bit of trash. So in every single industry out there, coal industry and all the different energy industries, minus maybe the nuclear power because people are so freaked out about that, but even that one could be retrofitted to some extent to actually resolve some of the problems of waste byproducts and such. And even to the extent of the nuclear waste that's wasted out of radioactive plants, even that is a resource that is, to this date, untapped. Nobody uses that resource. But they have to keep those rods in those cooling pools for at least 10 years before they can turn around and store them in barrels and then bury them deep under the ground, which they're still, at that point, still producing energy. Just not enough energy to boil water to the extent where it pressurizes the container that it's in and causes it to explode, spreading radioactive material out all over the place. So when they get the temperature down to where it's still hot, but it ain't hot enough that it can ever boil the water to the extent to pressurize a container, then that's when they will bury the stuff. So even if you understand the nuclear industry and how the problems of hydrogen explosions or radioactive material, those even have a solution. So no matter what kind of negative that the world tries to throw out about energy, there are positive solutions and readily available using existing technology that we have to this very day. So there is no problem out there, with the exception of getting people to enact these solutions. Now, I've called and I've thrown down the gauntlet for congressmen and senators and environmentalists and scientists and teachers and everybody and his brother. I've tried to get people to the table so that I can explain to them exactly what I'm explaining to you. That's why I'm always asking you, pass the podcast around, because if you pass that podcast around, then sooner or later it might hit the right ear, which will kick on a light bulb in their head, and they'll take that idea and they'll run with it. I don't even care if they claim the idea for themselves. A lot of these ideas aren't even my single ideas. They're just ideas that I've gotten from other people's ideas or even other people's ideas in general. Don't matter. It's all part of the mix. It's the pieces of the puzzle coming together to show people that there is a solution to what they've been claiming is a problem. Now, if you believe in global warming, climate change, or climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up, then you ought to be the first to the table to start listening and implementing some of these solutions, because they're readily available. But if you're going to complain about it and never do nothing about it, or somebody like Sweden tries to do something to resolve a trash problem, and they start doing this, and then you have people from another nation, such as Australia, poo-pooing their idea, or even the UK, EU or whatever, trying to add more regulations to them, then you're hindering the process that could be actually beneficial to getting down to the best solution possible, to where there's absolutely no waste, no toxic byproducts, everything is reusable, and it gives them every single thing that they claim they wanted all this time. This is why I wanted to play these podcasts for you, so that you could get a general idea. When you got a solution on the table, there's always somebody going to come to the table and say, oh no, this ain't going to work because of this. This ain't going to work because of that. Well, because of this or because of that isn't an answer, but there is a solution to the becauses of this and becauses of that. There are solutions that you can actually resolve that problem, and so it's not even an issue. So what you're complaining about isn't even an issue. It's not a problem. It's something that can be easily resolved by using physics and science and mechanics. You can fix all of that stuff. I keep saying we can fix this world. People keep poo-pooing that idea because they don't believe it's possible. You ain't going to be able to do it as long as industry's got a deaf ear to common sense. You're not going to be able to do it as long as governments are constantly trying to over-regulate people. You're not going to be able to do it as long as people are constantly indoctrinating children in school false science and craziness that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't ask for a solution other than, we got to recycle. We got to get rid of coal. We got to have the Green New Deal. We got to have all this. Well, if you really seriously want the Green New Deal, then you need to come to the table and we'll make it so. But you ain't going to make it so by beating down the people that are going to have to build the infrastructure, or enslaving them, or taxing them, and all the different stuff that you want to do. You're sitting on top of a gold mine of resources, yet you're not willing to use them because you think, like, for example, the doggone wind turbines are going to be karate chopping birds and bats out of the sky, and so that's going to be harmful to the environment. Or solar panels are going to drink all the energy from the sun, and it's going to be dark and cold outside. I mean, the ridiculousness is like an endless void of ignorance that just drives me insane. That's why I call it mad science. If you actually think that these are a problem, there are resolutions to every single one of them. There ain't one single problem that you can bring to the table, with the exception of not being able to get people to come together and resolve these problems once and for all. We've got the science, we've got the physics, we've got the tools, we've got the technology, we've got the manpower. But if you can't get them to the table, if you can't get them to listen to these ideas, try it before they deny it, work towards a positive solution so that one day, just like old Doc Brown in the Back to the Future movie, takes digs in the trash and puts it into Mr. Fusion and goes back to the future again in his time machine. Those kind of things can't never come to pass if you're sitting there dragging your feet and arguing amongst each other of what is possible and what isn't possible. We have every single solution to resolve every single problem on this world that we call Earth. Why aren't we doing it? And I keep saying it comes down to we the people. When recycling will only work if you do it properly, and he does it properly, and she does it properly, and you separate these materials into what I like to call premium recyclables. By doing that, and then following that process to the people that you're passing it on to, and ensuring that they're doing their part, it's a domino effect. It starts to work. This recycling thing starts to function properly, and everybody's got efficiency going on, and everybody's making money, everybody's saving money, everybody is able to utilize what nature's already provided in the most efficient manner in the history of time. We can do this thing, folks. I'm telling you, we can do this. So let's play out the rest of this poo-poo mission that these folks got on here.
Especially for compost, it's not so difficult because it seems natural. It's a natural cycle, composting, and this is something that people really understand.
In small city flats, it's not the easiest thing to organize, is it?
Of course, but you have many different solutions. You have home composting, of course, and it's easier, of course, if you have a garden, but it could also be done in apartments. But you also have community composting, and you also have separate collection of organics, and this can happen in a big city such as Paris.
And you, so you talk about collective organization. Is there a political will to improve?
I think so. It's slowly starting. For example, in Paris, the municipality decided to start as a separate collection of organics. So it's for the moment, it's only in a part of the city, but it's going to improve and to be extended to the whole city.
And looking more widely, there's clearly a good and positive financial impact in going green. Why, on an issue like this, is it so hard to get nations on board?
Well, I think because, of course, it's a lot of work and the transition is not easy, so that makes it a bit difficult for, especially for local politicians who have to handle a lot of different aspects of environmental issues. But in the long term, they know that it's a good thing for also for the budget of the municipalities, and since they are currently under a great financial stress, I think it will be a
pause it right there. See, they're underneath a great financial stress and the budget doesn't allow, but what they keep on missing is that this trash becomes part of that budget. It is now a financial as well as a physical resource. So if you understand what I've been trying to say, you can turn your trash into treasure. You can turn your trash into money. Just like putting a penny in a bucket or a dollar in a bucket, just like doing that, you got a million people putting a dollar in a bucket, you got $1 million. That turns out to be, you know, one big lump sum that could be utilized to actually help build infrastructures. You could turn this into a plus. People, if you didn't have to pay to send your trash out, you'd be more than happy to do it if you knew that that trash was actually, you separated it, you sent it out as premium recyclables. The people accepting that would then be able to turn that into a financial deal to help your economies and to help the infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. Instead of paying taxes with your trash, you'd pay taxes with your, or instead of paying taxes with your cash, you'd pay taxes with your trash. So at some point, when the machines are actually built and they're already working, now it comes to a point where you can actually take and monopolize on the price of your trash. You see what I'm saying? Now you can actually benefit financially from it, unless you just want to donate your trash to the system. So once that infrastructure's in place, once it's functioning, portion of your trash goes for maintenance and repair and upkeep and all that kind of jazz, and the other portion comes back to you in the in some sort of financial benefit. So that's what I've been trying to say. You know, somebody out there talks about a mathematical perfect economy. Well, this is a basically a mathematically perfected way to recycle and reuse your what otherwise would have been a resource that is either dumped in the landfills or dumped out there into the ocean. So, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of problem you put on the table. There's only one problem we can't resolve. At least we haven't found somebody with the right words to get it resolved, is that is to bring the people to the table, to get the average Joe to understand how important they are to a part of making that system work. Recycling is only as good as the people who from every single stage, from you taking your trash, separating your trash at home, to the people you send it to the people they send it to where it ends up in the deal. So if any portion of that, if the gear that is you is broken, then it's failed from the start. If you're doing everything you can and the next gear in line is broken, then it's failed. And so until you get that mindset down that it has to be done all the way through the entirety of the process, from recycling or even gasification, incineration, or whatever, that until it's done, until everybody takes those processes serious, then you just got a mess. You got children walking, digging through trash, other people's garbage, to try to earn a living, when that's the most shameful thing on humanity, that anybody would have to do that just to survive. And the fact that anybody's out there starving to death when we got all these doggone solutions and technologies available to us is just pure ludicrous ridiculousness. So if anybody's ever to get this done, it has to be everybody is going to get this done. So that's why I say, if you can, share these podcasts, because what we're saying right here, I believe, is good information. We've thrown links and links and links to all kinds of different things. If you step back, you look at all the tools that are on the table that are ready to be picked up and used by you and your brother and your cousin and your aunt and uncle and everybody around you, then we can solve this problem. We can solve it. We don't need to wait around for the governments and everybody to do it for us. We don't need to wait around for corporations or companies to have a change of heart. We can do this. We can build home machines to do the same doggone thing. So let's finish this one out.
A stronger motivation in the next few years.
So how does your organization, Zero Waste France, help this?
Well, we advocate for zero waste strategies at the local level, and we try to help local politicians through sharing examples of what is actually working already in some other countries or some other regions.
And what's working here in France? Is something that we can be proud of here?
Yes, of course. For example, we have great cases of organic collections in cities such as Lorient. It's been going on for years and it works very well. And the compost can be used in some farming, organic farming, which is also a good thing for other environmental issues, not only for waste.
Thank you very much for having spoken to us.
Thank you.
So there you go. You've got solutions. And, you know, no matter how many people try to put a negative spin on it, you know, the facts remain. If you understand science, you understand physics, you understand basic mechanics, you understand nature, then you've got every answer available to you to resolve every single problem under the sun. All of them. No matter what. I don't care whether people want to sit around and argue about we can't get fresh water to people, then you obviously haven't paid attention to mad science. You obviously don't understand basic physics and science and mechanics. So, you know, maybe it might be a painful process, so to speak, to build the doggone infrastructure necessary to ensure that absolutely nothing gets wasted. But by the time it's all said and done, what you leave for the future of mankind will be pretty impressive. They'll thank you for it. And I don't believe it'd even take that long if everybody really got serious about it. So let's play this last one here. This is why Sweden's buying trash.
In 2012, Sweden began importing nearly 1 million tons of trash from its European neighbors. The Swedes claimed that they themselves simply did not produce enough trash and needed more. Only 4% of household waste is landfilled in Sweden each year, but why on earth would anybody want more trash? Why is Sweden buying trash from other countries? Well, in fact, the global waste market is estimated to be worth almost $500 billion a year. Shipping trash from country to country and burning massive amounts of fuel in the process is primarily an economic decision. Many countries and cities charge a landfill tax, which in some places can be as high as about $100 a ton. Instead, some choose to ship their trash elsewhere for considerably less money. In 2010, China imported more than 39 million tons of recyclable waste, most of it from European countries. But in the case of Sweden, it's actually less of a cost-saving measure and more of an energy-saving measure. Sweden buys trash from nearby countries like Norway and uses it for electricity. Over 2 million tons of that waste is burned and converted into power for over 250,000 homes. This sort of exchange is called waste to energy and is becoming increasingly popular in Europe. However, despite the cost savings and recycling benefits, WTE plants are not necessarily the best for the earth. According to the Environmental Integrity Project, these plants can produce more pollutants than even coal-fired plants. In fact, issues with pollution from WTE plants have led China to actually stop accepting dirty and unsorted waste. They've also...
Did you hear that? So, another poo-poo on the whole deal. Because they weren't listening. They weren't listening to Mad Science. Now, there are people out there who have really been listening. That was the title for today's show. They have really been listening. You know, but there are people out there who have not been listening.
Those stricter limits on polluting recycling plants. Buying each other's trash may sound kind of crazy, but it's actually an ingenious solution to issues with taxation and energy. Of course, when it's cheaper to send waste out of the country than simply deal with it at home, there may be a bigger problem at stake. Either way, we're going to need a lot more ingenious solutions like these because the world population is rising, and thus so is our level of trash. Sweden may burn some of its trash, but the United States does not. Find out the reason why in this video by DNews.
If you're an average American, you were responsible for burying 880 pounds of trash in 2012. Is there something that garbage could be doing besides just sitting there? Sweden thinks so. About 1% of Swedish trash ends up in a landfill. The rest is almost evenly split between being recycled and burned for energy.
Thanks for watching our channel, everyone. Subscribe to Test Tube News so you can keep up with new videos every day.
All right, so there you go, folks. I played it all, both the pros and the cons. I played what they said was possible and what they said was not possible. So, question is, what do we do from now? Question is, where do we take this information? Well, if you like the ideas that you heard here, then, you know, take this podcast and rebroadcast it. Take it, chop it up, put it out there on Facebook and YouTube or whatever. Share it with people. Let them hear what was said here today on the Mad Science Show. And even invite them to come visit in on the Knights of the Round Table. You know, this is how we get ideas out here, and hopefully that when people hear them, they'll be inspired to actually, you know, take actions and do something as opposed to nothing. You know, I say that if you do something, something, at least something gets done. If you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. So, you know, there you go. What more can you ask for? You've asked for solutions out there. You've gotten solutions. And, you know, until you pick them up, it's just the same old thing. So, we've generated a lot of trash in our lifetimes, all of us. And for the most part, it usually just ended up in the landfill. Sometimes it ended up in doggone, out in the oceans and the creeks and all that kind of stuff. But if we understand that every single thing out there has energy involved in it, you know, and recycling, what better way to recycle it than you get build a machine that uses plasma technology and other technologies to not only break these down into their natural states, but to actually use it as a fuel source, a heat source, and have metals that you don't have to dig out of the ground anymore to be recycled again. And if a portion of it, like Sweden takes a portion of it, they recycle it, they take the other portion of it, they incinerate it, and to make that balance, they either buy buy or from people's trash, or other people pay them to take their trash, and so they keep enough materials going to run them doggone plants. They don't have to run them all the time, according to the weather that's over there. They only need them during a certain time when it's really cold. But as far as electricity, you know, they're also into solar and wind and other types of alternative energies. Once those infrastructures are in place, it ain't got nothing but benefits for people. You know? So, all you got to do is mimic what nature's already done. We have the science, the proven science, the technology, the knowledge, the resources, the people, everything necessary when we decide to come together. Until we decide to come together, we're just continuing to have these talks. Mad Science will always have a reason to come out here and talk about the ridiculousness of what's actually going on in society that is not necessary because people have ignored real science. Now, the mainstream science community has pretty much dropped the ball. Sold to the devil, so to speak. They're working for companies, they're working for corporations, they're working for universities, they're working for government entities, and they're not necessarily working directly for the people. The companies, corporations, and even the governments have patents and copyrights on just about every type of ingenuity that come up out of organizations like NASA and other colleges and all. They know they're making money. They're making patents that they can in turn lease those patents out to other people or whatever, and they're making money. They're constantly making money, and they're doing it off of you. They're doing it off of everything that you do, even when you throw trash in the trash, even when that trash goes to the doggone landfill. They still make money off of you. They still make money because if you throw it in the landfill, then you end up having to pay somebody who's paying somebody who's paying another somebody who eventually pays the taxes on the money that was changing hand over fist from your wallet to their wallet until it is finally all said and done. Everything is just as it has been. You look out into your oceans and your stream and you still see trash floating out there. Because the average Joe hasn't realized the greatest resource, which is this world that we live in. It takes a little bit of time to clean things up. And if you're throwing it out the window of your vehicle instead of throwing it in the right recycling bin, or even if you are throwing it in a recycling bin, but you're throwing it in the wrong recycling bin, or you're not trying to clean it or whatever in order so you're not putting nasty trash in there, or if you're mixing your food with your paper and all that, well, you know, eventually somebody's got to bear that cost. It's the companies, and then whenever they finally get a product out of there, that product's going to cost you more because it costs them more to make it. So this is why they keep on trying to use the lie that it costs more to recycle than it does for, to make the product. So it ain't worth recycling. Even when people were collecting aluminum cans, it was more effort than the price that they got for aluminum cans. You know, and papers and plastics, it was more effort to collect them. But at least if you did collect them and you took them to the recycling, you got something as opposed to nothing. But done properly, you could actually see a day when your waste would be a more valuable commodity than it is now. And so there's no reason why not to recycle as long as everybody in that system is doing it properly. That's the whole thing. It only takes one gear to break the machine down. That one gear will cause a domino effect. And then in that process, other people who see a way to monopolize on everybody else's failure will be making a lot of money and you'll be paying the price. It's that simple. And so, if you get the dream team together, you build these machines of a compact size. It might even be as large as the average automobile or a minivan or something like that, with compacted machinery in there that take and use all physics and science to grind this down and separate it into raw materials or turn it into raw energy for running the machine itself or even generating electricity for your homes. You could turn all your trash, all your yard waste, everything. Even if the dog drops one on the lawn, you can throw that into the machine. It'll resolve it. It's not a problem. You know? Nature breaks down everything. And if you understand how nature does it, and you mimic those physics, and you put them into a perfectly engineered machine, you've got everything that you said you needed, and then some. So, if you produce an excess electricity, and your neighbors produce an excess electricity, and everybody's producing excess electricity, and the power grid's having problem keeping up for those who didn't want to jump on board, then you can turn around and sell all your excesses as a whole to the system, and then monopolize on that as well. So, there ain't no excuse. The only thing that you can come across is how are we going to get anybody to work on it together? How are we going to get anybody to agree? Well, when you figure that one out, you have found the holy grail of free energy. When you figure out how to get people to compromise their or whatever, drop their ego and come together with all their best science and all their best knowledge and their skills and their tools and their resources and share them equally amongst each other. When you figure out how to do that, well, then you have quite literally solved the holy grail of free energy. You've solved all the world's problems. You've solved sickness. You've solved starvation. You've solved solved homelessness. You solved the so-called energy crisis, and you don't give them anything from that point on to holler about. There ain't no more, CO2 emissions causing global warming and all that craziness that you hear them lying about all the time. Nonetheless, nature does some pretty impressive things, and if you mimic what nature does. Angeling said in the People for People chat, he needs a flux capacitor and a DeLorean. Yeah, we could go into the past and give everybody all of this information, and then by now when we come back, hopefully our world would change and they've taken all this information and used it for good instead of weapons of war. But once again, there's that thing, that greed thing. You know, there's that greed, that power structure that keeps on fighting against the real change in the world. And the real change is never going to come about until we the people realize how important we are as one of the gears in the machine that makes the whole entire thing work. If you, as an employee of any company out there, do not do your part in that job, then that company fails. And then when they find the source of the failure, which is you, you're terminated, you're fired, you know? And governments know this, government employees know it, all these people out there in every industry know it, and so they keep the best working machine they can by hiring the best of the best. They hire you, the most brilliant, to do the tasks that keep them constantly in the power. And so if you want to be part of that machine, you can be part of that machine as long as you comply with the rules and regulations and the stipulations put upon you and do exactly as you're told and do not question, do not step out of line and stay inside the box. As long as you think like that, then you have a good, steady job. But if you step outside the box, well, you know how that works for you. It doesn't. They try to shut you down. They try to silence you. They poo-poo all your ideas. They send paid trolls out after you. They send people in the chat room who think that they are educated, but realize that they're not necessarily as educated as they think they are, because there's still so-called problems in the world. It's that simple. It's that ridiculously simple. The answer is and has always been you. And once you realize that, once your neighbor realizes that, once you all realize that together y'all can build a skyscraper, then if you can do that, then what else can you build? Together you can build infrastructure. If you can do that, what else can you build? We've allowed these people to put licenses on everything. We've allowed them to put regulations on everything. And then whenever it all comes out to play, we don't like the way that their coal-fired power plants work. We don't like the way that their logging industries work. We don't like the way that their war machine works. But yet we're still that gear in the machine that keeps the machine functioning. plain and simple. Without you, the system breaks down. So imagine the people deciding to gradually work their way towards their own system and start implementing all these ideas on a smaller scale at first and working their way up and actually getting themselves into seats of power to where they can share, look, this is what we've been doing in our community and it works great. Let's try to implement this on a larger scale in this larger community. Sure, it's going to take some time. Sure, it's going to take some effort. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, if you plant that seed and you start that ball rolling, the future generations are going to thank you, as opposed to cursing your very name and existence because of the mess that you left behind. Everyone out there is important. Not one single person out there is not important. Even the criminal, even the idiots, even the knuckleheads out there that are doing stupid things, they're still gears in the machine. But if they're turning the opposite direction, then they are feeding the system. If those people out there start to turn in your direction, then they're feeding the people's system. I hope that makes sense to you mechanically. It's like the reverse gear in your transmission. It's only there whenever you push it in reverse. And so, if you slow the vehicle down, bring it to a stop, put it in reverse, start gradually working your way back the other direction, then eventually you get where you want to go. Otherwise, nothing. Plain and simple, nothing. So, here on the Knights of the Mad Science Show and the Knights of the Round Table, we put solutions on the table. It's up to you to accept or reject. Either way, I've done my job. I've said what needs to be said. I've pointed out the truths. I've pointed out both sides of the story. I put the options on the table. Showed the technologies available, did it all with proven science, and then some. So apparently, they have really been listening all along. Because I've been at this for years. I've seen designs that I talked about long, long time ago actually being implemented. I've actually seen people get patents on ideas that I threw out there on the table. At all along, people were telling me how stupid I am. And they were telling me, you know, oh, you ought to patent that idea. And I kept saying, no, I want the world to run with it. But yet, other people were telling me how stupid I am. You know, oh, that'll never work. Well, if it isn't going to work, here we are in the year 2019, and there are many systems out there in play exactly like what I explained back then. And what? Why is it working for them? Plasma technology, I kept saying, wait till you figure out what you can actually do with plasma. Go back and listen to some of my videos. You'll hear me say it multiple times. When you find out what it is that I'm working on, you're going to be happy. And I'm seeing it. You know, I'm seeing the information actually come into play before I ever got to get to the grand finale, which makes me happy. So, someday, maybe not in my lifetime, because it takes a long time to get people to the table. It takes a long time to, to drill things into people's head that there are solutions available. But maybe sometime in your kids or even your lifetime, if you're younger than I am, you're going to see all these things come around. You're going to see a cleaner world. You're going to see a better world. Question is, who's going to be in charge? What rules are they going to have in place? And are you truly going to be free? If the people want to be free, they have to take the power. If they don't want to be free, then they can go ahead and get the same power, but it won't be under their control. Energy is free. No matter who wants to argue it and however direction they want to argue it, energy is free. It has always been. Nature has provided every single thing necessary for us to survive, to heal one another, to shelter each other, and to feed every single man, woman, and child on this place that we call Earth. I don't know what more to say. I don't know what more to say that it hasn't already been said. Got tons and tons and tons of podcasts up there. Got more on the way. I'm going to be uploading this podcast after this broadcast here, just like I always do, and I'm going to share links with you. And that you share them with other people, and other people hear them and they get inspired, maybe we can move our world forward with real solutions that have been readily available for as long as I can remember, opening my mouth to share ideas with the world. This whole thing is only as good as what we do with it. These networks that we talk about, People for People and Shaziz Radio, they function because people like Troy and all the different people out there doing things behind the scenes. People like Charles and Ben and all the different ones out there. Everybody out there who has put something into this machine that we call People for People Radio and Shaziz Radio Network. Those are all gears in the machine that makes this work. And even when we have a failure on one side, we got workers that run around and patch that hole with duct tape, baling wire, and sticky notes, and we still get the job done. We still deliver the message. And so, one way or another, we keep on doing what it is we're doing in hopes to inspire. And your helpfulness is when you go out there and you tell other people what it is that we're talking about. And you bring them to the table. Bring them to the chat rooms. Throw in some smiley faces or something. Everyone who's in these chat rooms right now, throw a smiley face up in there as a thank you to the people who make this happen. And as a thank you to yourself for making this happen. Because without the people in the chat room, sometimes our wheel don't seem to be wanting to work so well, because you inspire us by telling us that somebody's paying attention. So, every once in a while, throw a smiley face in for People for People. Everyone else, throw a little thank you, you know? Nobody's asking for anything more than that. Outside of if you like what you hear, to share a link. That's simple. It's a simple concept. Mad science is mad science because mainstream science dropped the ball. If we take all of these solutions that we provided and people like Stephen Gibbons, which is another gear in the machine, one of the workers that runs around and fixes things and finds information. You go look at his link on the Super Chat room. If you haven't been there yet, go check it out. Steven's resource page. He has posted link after link after link of alternative energy researchers and projects and all kinds of stuff. Did a brilliant job. I can't thank him enough. I'll tell you what, folks. What makes this work, what makes everything in this world work, is plain and simple you. Once you realize that, we got the world solved, and we can fix it all. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned tomorrow for the Knights of the Round Table. Stay tuned right after this show for the Music with Kara Hour. Take care.
Was that man that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.